She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. I have a big smile on my face today. And remember, we don't tell you what to think here on this radio show. We just want you to. Thank you so much for joining me today. The show is sponsored by the Fairfax Companies, and I am so very proud to have them as a partner on this journey. We have a really great, and I would say very different show today. Our guest is Derek Maintz. Did I say it right, Derek?
You said it right.
Maintz, yes. Executive Vice President for YouChange, and it's YouChange. And it's a cutting-edge company that's dealing with the challenges we face in our country and indeed globally with the massive amounts of electronic waste. Some of the things that I learned in this never-ending journey of Mrs. Green on their website actually knocked my green socks off. So I can't wait for Derek to share about what they're doing on our behalf and on behalf of the planet. And Derek, welcome. I just have a few quick announcements that I have to go through, so stand by. I am also part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network. My show airs on their network every Monday and Tuesday, and you can access them by visiting dreamvision7radio.com. They have over 500,000 subscribers on their internet show, focused primarily in the back east area, but globally listened to. Please also remember to join me every Saturday right here, live at noon, Arizona time, mrsgreensworld.com. And also a reminder that you can listen on your iPhone or Droid. I'm not going to talk about what my friend Scott says about me because I have a Droid, because that's not good for the air, but maybe iPhone is in my future. And indeed, all of the podcasts are on my website within usually a day after the show, because lots of people want to listen to the show in their own time. MrsGreensWorld.com again. And please connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, or email me at info@MrsGreensWorld if you have any questions. And once again, this is the time in my show where I do a quick shout out for Ecobello, one of Mrs. Green's proud partners. And they are another company making a huge difference in a very toxin-laden industry, that of skincare and cosmetics. And since I always like to attempt to tie it into our guest, Ecobello is committed to sustainable practices at every level, like YouChange, but very different, you know, business model. And their founder, Sally Malenga, is clearly an early adopter. They have been in business since 1992. They are known as a pioneer in the natural beauty field. And just think about it. Back then, I mean, that's like 20 years ago, when I was still putting a lot of not-so-good things on my face, Sally was starting a company that really believed in sourcing fairly. So she was on the whole wagon for fair trade. And she was ethical, building relationship with ethical farmers. So everything they do benefits the planet because of where their ingredients are sourced, who they do business with, how they package their products. It's important to me that when I purchase products, I can trust them. With Ecobello, I don't have to have any doubts whatsoever. And I'm also supporting their activism on many levels and their commitment to making a difference. So there's nothing better than for me to suggest to encourage you to think about using their products. I'm not telling you to do it. I'm just asking you to think about it. Ecobello, that's ECCOBella.com. Visit them and tell them Mrs. Green sent you if you want to. So now, Derek, we could spend the next 5 minutes. I can tell you, everybody, your title, you're the Executive Vice President for YouChange.
And actually, I just got promoted. I'm now president.
Well, here you go. Where is my bell when I need it? I don't have my bell, but anyway, right. I would ring the bell. That's awesome. Like, there's a lot of news we're going to be sharing on the show about you today. You know, I don't like to go through long bios because people want to hear about the content, but we have to go through a little of yours because it brings such credibility to what your company is doing and where you plan to take it. So you want me to read a little bit, or do you want to go into it with your own Derek spin on it?
You know, maybe the Derek spin is better. I have an interesting background because I came to sustainability not through the traditional form. I actually have a divinity background. So, you know, some people call me sort of a Tea Party liberal, you know. I'm pretty hardcore. You know, I went to seminary myself. You know, my parents were Pentecostal ministers. So I had an upbringing that was, quite religious, but also that really was very focused on stewardship. And that really, when I went to seminary, stewardship became sort of my mantra. And that really helped me understand that I really, even though I was on this other extreme, I really should care about the planet, right? There was a book that I read by a secular humanist philosopher, and the book was called The Creation. It was by a guy named E.O. Wilson. And in the book, he says, if you believe God created the earth or you believe it came through a series of random events, the fact that we're here is a miracle. Let's protect the miracle. And I thought that was really powerful, and that really changed the way that I thought about the world. And about 6 years ago, I had the opportunity to join the executive team of a little company called Earth 911 that is the leading company in the recycling industry. Linked the EPA website links to them over 1,000 times. They've been on Oprah, Good Morning America.
Oh, I love them. Agency.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, Al Gore has, when he was the vice president, gave us numerous awards. And we received all sorts of international awards for the work that we did in recycling. And I really came into that setting. My background before that was working in private equity and venture capital and doing turnarounds on businesses. And I got into this sort of, you know, environmental field, something that I was interested in because of my background at seminary. But my business experience up to that point had been trying to make companies profitable, companies that had struggled to find their identity, how to make them profitable. So I came into Earth 911, and I did most of my focus there. My title was Vice President of Energy Reclamation Initiatives.
Okay. Did you make that up?
Well, I sort of did. Essentially, what it meant was my job was working with big oil companies. And that was so different from what any people in the environmental field had thought about up to that point, right? Those were our enemies, was the way that people had approached things. But my thought process was different, and it was I would prefer to work with companies that have big problems, because then if I offer them even a small solution and they adopt it, it makes a huge impact across the entire world. So we had significant success working with companies like Monsanto and ExxonMobil and BP and Valvoline and Walmart and all these companies that at that time, that moment in time, were really standoffish to sustainability.
Wow, no kidding. But, you named some of the big ones that might still be considered standoffish.
Sure. But, you know, companies like Walmart now are considered the leader in sustainable business practices.
Yep.
ExxonMobil is considered the leader in biofuel creation. So not that we made all that happen overnight, but it was certainly by embracing capitalism and coupling it with sustainability, we made some really significant impact. When I left that company, I did a couple of more startups around clean and green. One company was called Green Nurture. I was the CEO for that company for a couple of years. Microsoft named it one of the most innovative technologies in sustainability in 2009. I've been around the block. I understand sort of the finance side of business. I understand how businesses work and how they have to be profitable. But I also, you know, really get the sustainability from a deep perspective, why it makes sense and why it not only makes sense for the planet, but it makes sense for the balance sheet and it makes sense for the future. Companies tend to think of sustainability as something having to do with green. When I go in and talk to them about sustainability, only about 20% of what I talk about is green. The rest is about diversity on their board. It's about making sure that the raw materials that they need to create their product are going to exist into the future. It's about reducing risks to their business in the long term. And when I go in and I talk that language, that's the language of boardrooms, right? That's not the language of the traditional language of green. And they tend to embrace that and adopt it very quickly.
And that's what's going to, me, ensure the success of it on a go-forward basis. I'm the same way when I do public speaking, when I work with companies on green consulting. There really is absolute validity to the triple bottom line concept. And now businesses are saying, No, wait. We're doing this and we are saving money. If you're saving money on energy and you're saving money on water and you're recycling paper, you know, the list goes on. The other aspect that you do that you didn't mention, but I know that when you partner with companies, you talk about it. Another part of sustainability is being good stewards of your own community. And that's huge in your corporate culture. You partner with schools. You partner with nonprofits. You really give back because it is really not just about green or, you know, leaky faucets. It's about creating sustainable jobs, creating bright futures for all of us, and not depleting the water supply. So I love it. So how did you change, get started? Be a little bit more,
sure.
Let's hone in on that.
Yep, you got it. So about 3 years ago, when I left Earth 911, the original management team that was hired in Earth 911 was really sort of a turnaround management team. So after a couple of years, we all were itching to get onto something else. So I left. I left, and about 3 months before I had left, the CEO had left, and he had went on and started UChange. When I left Earth 911, I had some other projects I was working on, but he and I had always stayed in touch. You know, we'd worked very well together and had significant success in turning the tide in sustainability. And actually, 1 year ago today, he finally convinced me to drop all the other balls I had in the air and to take the reins of UChange.
You're kidding.
Yeah, so
is this your
anniversary?
And you're the president of the company.
What
a momentous day. I love it. I feel honored.
Well, thanks. I'm glad. So the thought process behind UChange initially was, let's create a platform where we can reward people with cash for recycling their old unwanted electronic items.
Okay.
And that sounds really good. You know, it's like, oh, wow, people are going to just throw this stuff away. Why not pay them to give it to us? And we launched a business around that model. And there's other businesses out there that have tried to adopt that model since that time. The interesting thing is this. What we have discovered over time is that people don't really like to be paid to do things that make them feel good. And I know that sounds so weird, right?
No, it doesn't.
But let me give you a crude example of this, okay? I do a lot of lecturing at ASU, so I like to talk in the language of students. So I tell this story with students to help them understand that sometimes people don't want to be paid to do things. And I say, you know, let's say you've been dating a nice young lady for the last month or so. You're out to dinner. You say, hey, maybe you should come back to my place. She says, that sounds like a great idea. And then you hand her $50. Well, what just happened? She just went from, you know, liking you and thinking you're a sweet guy and all these things to immediately changing the dynamics of the relationship. And that's the reality that happens, unfortunately, in the minds of human beings. There are things that we want to do that we like to do because it gives us a feeling. When we put money into the equation, it actually cheapens the entire transaction. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And it's not like, you know, people do like to get money back for, like, if they recycle aluminum cans. But when you're involved in a massive project, I mean, I take my electronic waste to an organization here called Project Rise, and I don't want money for it, but all of the money they make on selling the e-waste goes to support programs for at-risk populations in Tucson. So, yeah, you're
exactly.
Right. I don't want to get paid. I'd much rather have the money go to creating a more sustainable community, as corny as that might sound. I mean it.
No. But, Gina, there's a real reason. There's a psychological reason for this, and the reason is called perceived value. When you buy the iPhone, you will buy it, Gina. Trust me, you can't be in the Android.
If my friend Scott is listening, he is dying. He gives me a hard time. You're right. I'm on my way.
Well, here's the challenge. If you go out today and you buy an iPhone 5 and you spend the $700 or $800, whatever that is for that, the unfortunate truth is this. The second that you walk out of that store, that item is worth about half of what you paid for it. And when Apple launches the next product, that the iPhone 4S that I have laying here right now that I bought 6 months ago for $699, right now is probably worth $150 to $200. The problem is this.
So can I buy yours? I'm just kidding.
Well, that's where you change does, right? I mean, but the perceived value in your mind is that you paid $700, so you know it's not worth $700. But when I offer you, let's say it is worth $200, for me as a business to make money and give something back to the charity and to do all the work on it and to clean the ESN number and to sell it on eBay, I have to buy that from you for $100.
Right.
Now, Gino, if you paid $700 for it a week ago, and I just offered you $100 for it, you don't like me very much. So what we've learned is that there's a psychological barrier there. People know that the item isn't worth anything anymore. Your old DVD player, Gina, I'm telling you, it isn't worth 20 cents. But you paid, you know, I just recycled my DVD player. I remember the day that I bought it. It was $400 when I bought it. It was top of the line. And then when I bring it in here and the guys run it through our system and they say, oh, it's scrap value of 15 cents. And I'm thinking,
oh my gosh.
But that's the reality. But if I had given that to a charity and I didn't know the number, I still think, wow, I paid $400 for that DVD player. And I know it's not worth that, but boy, I really hope this organization can get a lot of money for it.
Right, right.
So I get that feel good. I feel like I've gotten a much higher, I mean, if I was to tell that person, oh, you know, it's worth 20 cents, they're going to go, well, what did I even bother to drive over here for? So it's about that, you know, extending that perceived value. And when money is taken out of the equation and you get a feel good instead, all of a sudden now, you're more prone to take the action, and you feel like you've really done something, not only for the planet, but for the organization. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense, and it just, I mean, this is not in the regular sequence of things, but what blows me away, you heard me earlier in the show talk about the Fairfax companies and Jason Tankersley being one of my sponsors. He's become a dear friend. He owns three large landfills here in Pima County, and he does green waste for Frito-Lay. He does post-construction and landscaping waste. What blows me away, Derek, is that people throw their electronic waste in the landfills. They put it in their garbage can. They put it in dumpsters. And to me, and I don't really think it's just because I became Mrs. Green 4 years ago, I never would have done that. I know that it has to go somewhere. So how do people get ignited to realize, you know, I want to talk a little bit later in the show about the dangers of e-waste in the landfills. There are health risks. I mean, there's so much more to this than just filling up our landfills. So how is it that people live in that world where they just put it in the garbage?
Well, let me tell you, only about 10% of electronic items are recycled in the U.S. And the average American home has 24 items in their home. Is, you know, they're going to be obsolete soon, and people don't recycle. And a lot of it, honestly, is people don't know what to do with it. And I'll give you a great example. Yeah. The business that UChange has built is very focused on us going into a school setting. We go in, we talk to the kids about electronic waste, and then we empower them to be the agents of change. But I will tell you that in every one of those presentations, when we stand up in front of the kids and we say, here's a plastic bottle, what do you do with it? Throw it in the recycling bin. Here's a piece of paper, what do you do with it? Throw it in the recycling bin. Here's a cell phone, what do you do with it? The whole crowd freezes because they don't know.
Right.
And this is the generation that cares, right? All they think about is this. We call it test marketing. We empower kids. We tell them, look, tell your parents, go home, talk to your parents about electronics, collect all these things, bring them into your classroom, put them in this bin, and then we'll pick them up, process them, and return money back to your school. We call that pest marketing, right? Because the kid goes home, dad has the iPad that dad hasn't done anything with, it's shoved in a drawer, and little Johnny goes home, and daddy, 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 and after the 60th time, daddy says, take this, take it to school. You know, he's just like, shut up already. But that's okay. right? Because we got the action that we wanted. I don't care all that much that Daddy cared about the environment in the transaction. I care about the fact that my pest marketing strategy has worked.
I love that. I love it. I'm going to write it down. Pest marketing. And you know what? I've heard that before from parents. They say, yeah, we can't throw anything in the garbage. My kids are there saying, Mom, that needs to be recycled. So, yes. So go ahead, pest marketing, love it.
It's so true. So we use the pest marketing strategy, and we empower kids. The challenge that we have with kids is, you know, we have to be careful on our messaging. When we go in and it's kindergarten, first, second, third, fourth grade, you know, we go in there with a very sort of fluffy message, right? We know what we're supposed to do. It's good for the planet, saves the polar bears, you know, that kind of stuff. When we go after those high school kids, we've got to get a little bit deeper because they don't care as much about fluffy bunnies, right? Or even if they do, it's not cool to say they do. So we sometimes have to get a lot deeper into it. We need to talk to them and plant seeds in them with things like the PlayStation War. And we can talk a little bit more about the PlayStation War later. But, you know, where the materials come from to create these electronic items, they actually come from areas where there's you know, murder and rape and all these things happening on a daily basis. So when you can connect their mindset to not thinking as much about the difference in the landfill, but thinking about the teenage kid who's just like them, whose parents were killed and is now, you know, forced labor in a mine someplace,
right,
because
right,
you had to have your new iPad, that clicks with them, right? They can relate. They can have empathy for that person. And you know, at that age, when your emotions are sort of, you know, tricky, we need to play on that. You know, we need to play on that. We need to show them that, you know, in China, there's terrible, you know, kids are subject to really terrible things in breaking down these electronics.
And
you know,
India and Africa. I mean, it's just, I've watched some videos and it's just appalling. We are going to have to take a short break. And yeah. I always make a joke about how the breaks annoy me, but they don't annoy me because of my wonderful sponsors. And that's when we get to do shout outs about them. We'll be right back. We are having a wonderful, riveting interview with Derek Mainz, president of UChange. Please stay here with me. We'll be right back.
Can you predict the future? The reality is we can't, but we can be ready for it. Funded by the National Science Foundation, researchers at the University of Arizona are working on a $3 million project to study the monsoon and learn about our changing desert weather, climate, and ecology. Such knowledge will help guide us to a more sustainable future, not just for our desert, but for the world. Now that's thinking ahead. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
She's the most exciting thing that's ever happened to you, and you want to spend eternity with her. She deserves nothing less than the best, an Abbott Taylor original. A diamond engagement ring as exceptional as she is that will make her eyes sparkle every time she sees it. Because we design and make our own jewelry, we can create something wonderful for every budget. I'm Abbott Taylor. I'd like to invite you to come see what Abbott Taylor Jewelers has waiting for you. With 35 years and thousands of original jewelry designs, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. We're proud to say using recycled gold, we have saved over 100 million pounds of toxic waste from this planet. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green. Did you know that the 2012 VW Beetle has been completely redesigned, that it has exciting new features, look, and performance, and that it is one of Oprah's best things for 2012? The best news is Chapman VW has them in stock. Check out the new Beetle at Chapman VW at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan, or visit them at TucsonVW.com. Be sure to tell them that Mrs. Green sent you.
You can always find things around the house to give to Goodwill, but I have a bigger reason to give. My brother, Jim. When Jim was just 6 weeks old, he had a stroke. He had to rewire his brain to do most things we all take for granted. Thanks to Goodwill, Jim has a job and a sense of purpose. You know how they say your donation to Goodwill changes lives? Well, it's true. Goodwill is the best thing that ever happened to Jim. Please donate today.
Did you know that even a donated doorknob can help Habitat for Humanity? Habitat's Habistore accepts donated items like furniture, building materials, and appliances. Donations come from commercial builders, malls, restaurants, hotels, and individuals like you. Then, items are bought by bargain hunters who come across the very things they are looking for, just like the right doorknob. The best part is that Habistore sales generate funds for building homes. Call 520-889-7200 or visit HabitatTucson.org.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. And we are certainly giving you lots to think about today with our very exciting, very informed, incredibly experienced guest, Derek Mainz, who is the president of UChange. And I would describe UChange as a cutting-edge company dealing with the challenges we face with our e-waste, our electronic waste. Where is it going? What kind of risks does it have? Derek, thanks for being with us. And I have to say, your intro of your background was much better than I would have done, and it was peppered with things that I did not know, so thank you for that. And just a really quick announcement about Mrs. Green's World. On Monday, October 8th, we are launching our third annual Arizona's Greenest Workplace Challenge, and it's so apropos of your being the guest today, Derek, because it's a way that Mrs. Green's World highlights and partners with businesses throughout Arizona that are really committed to degrees of sustainability. It doesn't have to be a green company that sells a green product. It has to be a company that has the core values of moving in a more sustainable direction. The first year, Golden Eagle was the winner, and boy, did they rock it. The second year, TriSports.com was the winner. They are both sponsors in different ways of this year's contest. So all of you listeners, if you work for a green company, if you know of a green company in Arizona, let's activate that matrix. We're excited. We have great judges. And Derek, I'll be asking you to help promote it on your Facebook page, because it's a great thing for Arizona. So let's talk a little bit about, I'm very interested in a lot of things that you're doing, but when you first started, what does the model look like? You know, you're obviously a bunch of really experienced entrepreneurs, early adopters, 30,000 feet level thinkers. How did you put together the business model, and what does it look like?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, it's funny. I was in a board meeting yesterday, and we really were discussing what UChange really is. And you know, although from the outside we look like we're an electronic waste collection and refurbishment company, but really internally we're two different things. We're a software company that we're software and a marketing and events company. And that doesn't seem to make sense from the outside looking in. But
okay,
let me tell you why we can do what we do. When I look at the electronics recycling marketplace, I see a couple of different things. I see recyclers out there whose intent is to collect everything that they can and crush it up and get the raw materials out of it.
Okay.
That's the lion's share of the business. And then there's also a couple of companies out there that collect and recycle very specific things. For instance, Apple loves to recycle Apple products.
Right.
If you go to the Apple website and say, I have an iPhone, they want to pull that out of the marketplace, right? So those are the two sort of sides. There's this I want a very, very specific item, and please send it to me and I'll give you some sort of credit. And then there's this other side where I just want everything and I've got a huge machine that's going to grind it all up and I'm going to get the gold and things out of there. The challenge is this. What that assumes on the big recycler side is that those items are obsolete. And the reality is this. When you and I grew up, Gina, obsolescence was controlled by functionality, meaning that if we had a VCR and it wasn't working and we couldn't fix it with duct tape and chewing gum and paper mache, right, we threw that away and we replaced it. But when you, in today's society, obsolescence is controlled by sexiness. And what I mean by that is this. The iPhone 5 just came out, and I'm sitting here with an iPhone 4 in my hand, and I'm embarrassed.
You're feeling less than. You should have a Droid, dude. You would really feel bad. Oh, I so get it.
But you get it, right?
I
now, if I have
get
the iPhone 4 like my wife has, You know, you don't want anybody to see it. If I had an iPhone 3GS, oh my God.
You would just keep it hidden in your pocket and use it in the restroom.
Right. I mean, so the obsolescence is controlled today. It's not controlled by functionality. It's controlled by two things. The first is sexiness. Apple comes up with a new product every single year so that I'm forced to upgrade. The second is manufacturer control obsolescence and support. Let me give you an example. We're all familiar with the iPad, right? It came out 3 years ago. It was a completely cutting-edge device. For a year, they sold the iPad 1, and then they changed over to the iPad 2. The newest software download from Apple does not support the first iPad.
Yeah, so guess who got one of the first iPads, and then now I'm on the less than list for that, too. It doesn't take video.
And the worst part is, Gina, the new operating system that Apple just downloaded is not, you cannot use it on that Apple iPad. That is a three-year-old device that Apple has said, you're kidding me, people still use that thing? So think about what that's saying to the marketplace. Apple is saying, we're not going to support items that we sold 2 or 3 years ago, because who in their right mind would still be using a piece of technology that's that old? Now, that's shocking, right? But what that is it's the constant upgrading of the marketplace. So what that means is that the recycler who's grinding everything up to try to get the gold and the silver and the materials in there, they're grinding up a three-year-old iPad that's still functionally perfect. They're grinding up an iPhone 4S that I just bought 7 months ago, and they're making $1 a piece on those things because of the materials. UChange is really a software company. What we have built, you familiar with Sanford and Son?
Yep.
Remember Sanford and Son driving around?
I'm old
we've
enough.
Taken the Sanford, we've taken that Sanford and Son model, and we have applied technology to it, software to it, so that when we collect items from a school, we bring them in, we put them into our software, we take that three-year-old, four-year-old BlackBerry, we enter the model number into our software, we take a picture of it. The software then has all the historical data on that and knows exactly what that item is going to sell for, the exact day of the week, and the exact hour of the day the item will sell for. So it calls on all these third-party sales outlets, eBay, Amazon, all these things, and it comes back and it says, hey, Derek, this old BlackBerry is worth $11, and you'll sell it Tuesday at $2.23, and here's how you do the hard reset. Yep. So we really are soft, and then what we can do is based upon what we have to do to that item. Let's say it's a laptop. We're going to have to wipe all the personal data off, you know, clean off the hard drive so that no information's there, buy a new operating system, maybe upgrade the RAM. On an item like that, we might pay a school or a charity a third of what we sell it for because we've got cost invested into it. But an item like an iPhone that all I have to do is hit the reset button, we might pay them 60, 65% of what we're going to sell it for. But the algorithm that we have in our system tells us exactly what to pay. It tells us when we'll sell it, what we'll do with it. It's really, and that's what is the game changer, right? That would cause old Fred Sanford to look at the sky and yell, I'm coming home, Elizabeth. You know,
Gosh, it's making me want to do that too. So it is really the ultimate recycling. Now, just let's press pause here for a minute because I'm like, you know, you took my breath away. So is it through some extensive cyberspace algorithms that eBay can tell you when you're going to sell it? Just that little tidbit blows me away. How do they know when you're going to sell it?
Well, we pull raw data from all of these different sources, including our own historical information, and then we apply an algorithm to that looks at all the sales cycles these items, and it applies a sexiness factor. So it looks at a BlackBerry and it says, oh, Derek, yeah, there's people out there looking for this, but the reality is it's going to take you 60 days to sell it because, you know, the guy that's looking for this isn't, you know, he's not a quick, you know, it's not a fast sale.
It's Mrs. So Green looking for an iPhone 3.
There you go. Right, exactly. So based upon the sexiness of that item, I can pay more to the school. I can pay more to the charity because what the system tells me is how long it's going to age. I can walk back to my cell phone guy right now, and if he pulls an iPhone out of a box, the system, he will literally price it in our system, and then he will press a button that says post to eBay or post to Amazon or post to our website, and the system will look at all of this historical information. It will determine what to sell the item for, and it will determine when to post it for sale to maximize the value back to us and the value back to the school. So an example we use here is we have determined that Sundays at 2 p.m. is the worst time in the week to sell iPhones on eBay. You get 20% less if you sell them between the hours of 2 and 3 than any other time of the week. So we know that, so we can pay more for that item, right? We can, because we can do all the strategy on the back end. So we've built an extensive piece of software that does everything from serialize every single thing that comes into our warehouse. It prints the checks for us on the back end. It prints all the shipping labels. It does all the accounts payable and receivable. So that's why we're very different, right? We're not here just to chop stuff off. Right. Now, still, if I collect 100 items, probably 50 of those end up going to the recycler. You know, when we go to a school or a charity, we're going to get the old CRT monitor. We're going to get the 10-year-old laptop.
I don't have one of those, okay?
Right. But there's those items that they're beyond, you know, they may be obsolete. Printers, for instance, a lot of them are obsolete, not because of functionality, but because the Windows 7 doesn't work with them anymore. So those are just items that we can't pay the school for because we don't get anything for it. All we can do is make sure that that's responsibly recycled and nothing ever goes in the landfill. But what we're looking for is almost think like gold panning, right? There's a stream of electronics that are coming past us every day, and our software and our algorithm is looking at every single item and saying, oop, take this item and put it in a box over here. Oop, this is a cell phone. We can give this to a charity. You know, it's not worth anything to us, but we can give it to a charity for battered women. Oop, this is a desktop that's too old, but there's refugees from other countries that are, you know, there's a charity
that supports.
That
would just be so glad to have it. Yes.
Right. Exactly. I mean, they don't know who Steve Jobs is, so they don't really care that it's 3 years old.
Right. They're not going to embarrass me because I have a droid.
Exactly. You know, I mean, and that's really the way that we look at it. We have to look at the stream that we get, and we have to say, okay, school, okay, charity, anything that's functional that we can sell, we're going to pay you for. The other stuff, you know, just the cost of moving that stuff around, we lose money on it. But that's part of the business, right? And it's part of being a good steward and making sure that these things are properly taken care of and that nothing ever gets in the landfill and that nothing ever gets shipped overseas.
Okay, so let's go back to what you said about Apple and the sexiness factor and the planned obsolescence. And I'm asking you, Derek, with your experience in all of these different areas and your life on the planet. To me, I watched a film a couple of weeks ago, and it was called Planned Obsolescence. And it was actually the word that I would use. I was thoroughly disgusted when I saw it, and it was mostly about the light bulb, how a group of people got together, and there are protocols and covenants and all signed documents saying, okay, the light bulbs are lasting too long. We have to create a new technology. And this was in the 1920s, like a long time ago. We have to create a new technology that will have light bulbs burn out faster. What are we going to do with the massive consumerism that we're experiencing? Because, as you said, an insignificant portion on the global scale actually gets to you, recycling, right, in a sustainable, to me, an ethical, moral way. I mean, the model just excites me. But what about Apple? Are they ever going to say, we're on board, we're not going to create things that should end up in the landfill in 3 years? Am I Pollyanna hoping that at some point some of these companies will not create things that have a shelf life of 12 months?
Right. Well, and I will tell you that, unfortunately, here's the reality of this. It's very easy from us. You know, I like to go and I give a lot of speeches about what I call sunglasses. And I say, you know, if you come from a red state, you probably have a pair of red sunglasses. You see the world tainted in a specific view. If you have a sustainability background, you put your green sunglasses on every morning when you first open your eyes, right? And you see the world from sustainability. The real challenge that we have, and this is not something that's easy to solve, the problem that each and every one of us have is the Western style of thinking requires perpetual growth. It requires
everything, right. To
always get, you know, Gina, if you have investments in the marketplace and every quarter your broker calls you and says, hey, I lost 10% this month, congratulations, what would you do?
I would not be happy.
You would fire them.
That's right.
Right. You want everything to grow. And we believe that everything always will grow. There's a great example that it was pretty famous on the internet of Boulder, Colorado, I think it was, years ago. They put out a statement and they said, you know, we just want our city to grow by 5% a year. And people thought, wow, that's just a nice, even-keeled number, 5% a year. And a local professor went in and showed them that what that meant was that in 80 years, they would have 60 million people living in downtown Boulder, Colorado. And Boulder, Colorado said, oh, my God, we didn't realize that. That's incredible. So they said, well, we'll just grow by 3% a year then. You know, it's like,
right.
No, you don't understand. There are limits to every single system. And unfortunately, the requirements, and I deal with this every day. UChange is a publicly traded company. So I have a sworn fiduciary responsibility to shareholders to provide long-term shareholder value.
You do. You're right.
This is an oath that I swear, that I say I put profits above everything else. Now, you know, as a human being, I say, well, no, there's social aspects. There's all these other things. But because of the corporate structure, I have a sworn, I have to take an oath that says profits above all else. And that's a challenge, right? If I'm the CEO of Apple, how do I make a profit if I don't sell product? So I have to control the obsolescence. I have to make you think that you're uncool by owning that item. And that's going to take radical transformation, not just from the top, but it's going to change. It's an expectation change from us as human beings. You know, if we start to consume less, well, the economy is going to shrink and more people are going to get laid off and there's going to be less jobs and we're not going to have that standard of living. So, you know, what do you do? I mean,
we're going to have to take another break, but from your view, it's getting on the education piece of it. And yes, it is a healthy economy that continues to grow. And then comes the part of the sustainable, what are we going to do with it so that we can manage the waste and share and make sure that everybody in the global economy is getting some of the level playing fields. So we have to take another quick break. I am sure everybody who's listening are really glad they are. We're talking to Derek Maintz, president of UChange, a cutting-edge company dealing with e-waste. Please stay here with me. We'll be right back with lots more good stuff.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Hi, this is Mrs. Green with some great news about the all-new 2012 VW Passat. It's 2012 Motor Trend Car of the Year, best-in-class for legroom, and has standard Bluetooth technology. VW thought of everything by giving the Passat a brand-new, sleek design that conveys confidence and assertiveness. If you're looking for the best ownership experience possible and a great new Passat, visit Chapman Tucson at 4600 East 22nd Street between Columbus and Swan.
Can academic research really save the planet? This year, the University of Arizona took full ownership of Biosphere 2. With 5 ecosystems enclosed in over 7 million cubic feet of sealed glass, Biosphere 2 is a premier facility for environmental research, where the top minds in the world will come together to address some of humanity's greatest challenges, such as climate change. Now that's using your brains. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And if you're not thinking a lot today with this guest, your wheels are needing some lubrication, because Derek Maintz, the president for UChange, is just knocking my green socks off. And it's just, you know, Derek, it's so interesting on this Mrs. Green's journey. What a great guest you are. And it gets me excited about what I do, excited about sharing the word. And it gives me hope, if that makes sense, because sometimes the information I read is daunting to me. You know, in the time that we have left, I have lots more questions, of course. I hope this won't be the last time that you'll be on the show. What I'd like to talk about the health risks. I'd like to talk about your new exciting news about Earth 911 and how you're going to expand the model for what you're doing. And then the third thing is, and I'll remember, I promise, is what do you do with the waste that you don't sell? So why don't we start? What do you want to start with? Because there's a lot there in 20 minutes to cover.
Yeah, let's talk about the waste first. So we are really conscious of waste. You know, as we said in the last segment, we have some really daunting problems facing us in society. And one of the things that I think we as Americans need to do is we need to change our expectations of what we expect out of the system. You know, do we really need, my wife and I have wrestled with this for a while, do we really need two jobs? Do we really need to do all this consult? Do we really need to work 80 hours a week?
Right.
Or would we be happier to downsize our life
and can we
pay
get
off our
by
debt?
Do with less? I we have the same conversation.
And that's something that would change the entire. If everybody in America said, you know what, we really don't need all this. You know what, I don't need to do all these jobs. I don't need to do all these things. That would change if we found our happiness someplace else. And then I think we need an infinite cycle of raw materials. And that's really what we do with our waste. We are really conscious about the fact that we don't want anything ever to go into a landfill. If something goes into a landfill, in all reality, think of it like Al Gore's old term of lockbox, right? It's stuck there, and it never can be taken out. So we want to make sure that these items, items like aluminum and lead and gold and silver and coltan, all of these materials are mined around the world. Some of them in particular, like coltan, is mined in the it comes from the Congo, right? The conflict in the Congo, 5 million people dead over the last 20 years, is pretty much about coltan. So, you know, that's one of the reasons that in Europe they call it the PlayStation War. So making sure that items like coltan never, ever get taken out of the system, but can be used infinitely, that is the most important thing that every single person here can do.
Okay.
And that, if you think about that, that has to go for everything that you own. I recently went, about 2 years ago, we had some storage units. And I went through those storage units, and I got rid of a bunch of stuff. Stuff I took to Goodwill, stuff that I sold, stuff that I recycled, you know, old paperwork, stuff like that. And as I was doing that, I kept thinking about how I'm putting these things back into play. Right? I'm putting them back into the system so that another tree doesn't have to be cut down,
another
Christmas bulb doesn't have to be made. And I think that's the change that we have to make as human beings. That's the mantra that we have here at UChange. We know that if we take in 100 items, about maybe 25, 30 of those we're going to be able to do something with. Some of the other things we might be able to part out. But still, by volume, the majority of the stuff we collect has to go someplace. We only work with recyclers that can certify that they are landfill free. They never send anything to the landfill, even if that means that we don't get paid for our recycling, because we don't. Most companies actually make money on recycling. We make exactly 0 cents. Our recyclers hate us because we take anything out of there. You know, even the cell phones, we have a specific cell phone recycler because we know what they do with those things. So our recyclers don't like us because the stuff that they really get from us really is, you know, it's done.
It's stripped down.
We take all the, we take all those good parts and we reuse them. Reuse is the top, recycling is the last possible thing we should want to do with something. We should want to reuse it. We should want to make sure that it gets back into the system. And, you know, there are people out there. I mean, we sell a lot of laptops here. Most of the times we sell laptops to either families that are struggling.
Right.
You know, I mean, dad works, mom stays home with the two kids. They need a computer. And they're not going to go to Best Buy and drop $1,000. But they can come in here and spend $125, $150 and get a really nice laptop. You know, so we sell a lot of those. And then we also tend to sell to people. I have friends who call me all the time and they're like, well, my kid just broke his 15th cell phone this week. You know, can I buy another one?
Or dropped it or lost it or it got stolen. We've been down that road. Right.
Absolutely. right? So when I can sell them something at low cost where they know it's going to get beat up, you know, they're content with that. And a lot of times, actually, the inner city schools or the private, like religious schools, tend to be our biggest customers. They call us and say, hey, we need 50 laptops. And we say, great. Do you care if they're all the same brand? No, we don't care. Okay, I've got 50 of them, and I can do them for $150 each. And they go, wow, we would have went to Best Buy and spent $800.
Yep.
So, you know, it's about extending that life cycle as long as is humanly possible. And I think that transitions over to, you know, the relationship with Earth 911. As I mentioned earlier, I previously was a vice president in Earth 911. And as UChange has grown, Earth 911 has grown, and recently we decided that it made sense to merge together and to put all those resources into sort of the joint effort. The name of the new company is Infinity Resource Group.
Oh my gosh.
We believe to be used forever, right? Aluminum never degrades, right? So it's like when I throw that aluminum can into the landfill, the probability is that it'll never get touched again. And that's really bad news, right? We want to make sure that those things get reused. Now, interestingly, in some countries, particularly third world countries, they have started a process called landfill mining, where they actually send people into the landfills as if they were coal miners. And they dig into the ground, and they sort through all these old materials, and they pull out the ones that now have value. So there's hope for our landfills that will create a system in the future that we can go and recover that stuff. But obviously, it's a lot better on this end for us to fix the problem.
Right, before it gets there. Yep. Prevention.
Exactly.
It's the old social services prevention model. Okay.
Absolutely.
But how are you going to do it with what you do? You know what I mean?
Is it a
replicable model? Can you implement it in other places around the country? Because God knows they need you.
Absolutely. We have our business model. This is really our test location here in Arizona. And we have proven the model well enough that we are opening 50 more locations in the next 36 months.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So in every major metro in the U.S., and taking this model out, and we've already started to see schools, you know, particularly schools, because PTAs are used to either selling high-cost or high-calorie items to
right.
use as fundraisers. And when we can say, hey, we don't want to add 10 pounds to your hips or take $10 out of your wallet, we just want you to give us all your old junk, parents embrace that, you know. They get very excited with that. So, you know, we're excited about that. We have expanded from just Phoenix. Now we're servicing Tucson. We're servicing Flagstaff. We're doing schools there every single day. We are opening a Vegas location at the beginning of the year. We'll open three more locations later in the year. And then we'll start rolling out with probably a monthly, 1 to 2 locations a month rolling out from there. So there's significant opportunity for us to grow. And it's based upon the fact that we're revolutionizing the way electronic waste is currently processed, right? Our software is what makes the difference and what gives us the scalability. It's what takes us from Sanford and Son in a pickup truck. I'm coming home, Elizabeth, you big dummy, you know, all those statements.
I love,
you know,
that analogy. It does date us, however, Derek. No, but there are reruns on one of the channels, and it's still
funny.
Yeah,
that's what we'll blame it on
the reruns,
right? Yeah, we're much too young for all that. But that's the difference, right? That's what makes us different. That's what makes us scalable. And that's what, you know, our investors in the marketplace is so excited about, is it's really, it's the next generation. It's the iPhone of the cell phone revolution, you know, evolution, right? We had all these sort of cell phones for years and years and years, and then all of a sudden, this new technology came out and everybody went, whoa, that changes everything. And that's what we really feel like UChange is.
And, you know, one of the changes that happened for me in this journey of becoming Mrs. Green, which I didn't realize I was being prepared for my entire life, is I call it the sealed envelope. And they use that in building a lot, where a house is a sealed envelope. But I like to make the case for the planet being a sealed envelope. Everything that's going on here, we are a global community. So I don't think most people think electronic waste, health risk, electronic waste, you know, autism, electronic waste, other things that you wrote about on your website. Talk about that a little bit, because you are conscious of it and you do a good job of promoting that part of it that do make people care.
Absolutely. absolutely. I mean, there are significant downstream, you know, disadvantages to putting this stuff, to improperly placing this stuff in landfills. And I mean, there have been study after study after study that talks not only about the environmental costs, but just the significant health risks. I mean, you're talking about, you know, elements and chemicals and all these sort of things. You know, the fact that a lot of computer housings are flame retardant, that doesn't occur naturally, right? You don't go out into the forest and say, oh, what's flame retardant in here, right? That's a chemical process. And that's a process that degrades over time and leaches back into our soils. It does all these kind of things. So when you look at things like, you know, rates of autism and how they've dramatically increased, you know, in the past even decade, there's, how do you make that direct tie? I don't know. That's sort of hard to do. But there is science out there that makes those connections and says, you know, all of these things that we're putting into the ground have to be a bad thing, right? One of the things that I've talked about, and I've had a lot of success with both chemical companies and oil companies in my past career, when I go in to talk to them, I never, ever talk about global warming. I don't talk about polar bears. I don't talk about the standard stuff that we're supposed to talk about like environmentalists do. What I talk about is pollution, because nobody wants pollution.
Exactly.
Right? You go out and test the water in your pool.
It's such a great way to put it, yep.
I mean, you test the water in your pool because you don't want your kids swimming in a place where there's toxins. So if we talk, if we break that language down, that language crosses the aisle. I can guarantee you if I go to Washington, D.C. right now and stand in front of the Senate and stand in front of the House and say, who wants there to be more pollution, right? Nobody's going to raise their
hand.
If I say, who believes in global warming, whoa, now all of a sudden that's a totally different conversation.
Yeah, it polarizes the conversation.
Right, but it's really exactly the same. If we reduce pollution, right, we reduce global warming. So it's framing that conversation, and it's making sure that people understand that there is an effect, right? There is an effect to them, and that they need to be conscious of it, and they need to be thinking about it, processing it, and making sure that things get properly taken care of. We all know to be good stewards. Our mom used to tell us to put our toys away, right, when we were done with them. So we just have to take mom's advice and do the same thing when we're done with our electronic toys.
I totally agree. And it's very interesting to me that you bring up the word pollution, because that's what that's what changed things in the 60s. And when we wanted to stop pollution, I mean, I'm from Jersey, and the Hudson River was like a toxic, it was so awful, and dead fish, and it smelled. And what happened then is people got aligned around an intention to clean up the waterways, and look at it now. It's totally been restored, and it was pollution. They went upstream and got people on board for a vision for a healthier planet, because it was making people sick. So that's a great word to use.
It is, and I wrote an article a couple of years ago about cap and trade, when a lot of the conversation was around cap and trade. And I did some interesting research. I went and found out the history of cap and trade. And what I discovered was that cap and trade was created by the Republican Party to reduce acid rain. And it was widely embraced by Republicans. Yeah, it was George H.W. Bush created what was called the emissions trading. He is the father of cap and trade. The Republicans loved it because they said it was a free market capitalist solution to handle these kind of problems. The Democrats hated it. Now, all of a sudden, here we are 20 years later.
Flip
and
that
it's
switch.
Funny because I can't... Right. I can't tell you how many Republicans I've shown that to and say, here's how we reduce sulfur dioxide with emissions trading. And they go, that's an incredible idea. And I'm like, that's called cap and trade. You know, and they're like, oh. You know? So sometimes it's just we've got to look historically, too, and understand nobody wants this problem to be there. We have to take the polarizing language out of the conversation. We got to get down to the facts, brass tacks, and make it happen.
Let facts get in the way. So we have about a minute left, and I have to do a couple of shout-outs. Thank you is my biggest shout-out for your willingness to be on the show, for what you and your company are doing for the planet. Good luck with Infinity Resource Group. Everybody who's listening and listening on the podcast, their website now is youchange.com. It is a content-rich, interactive, fascinating website. You won't be bored for a second, so I have to say that. And next week, we have a live show coming up on Tuesday, October 9th, Down to Earth with Mrs. Green, talking with the University of Arizona's nutritionist there, Hannah Feeney, about U of A Food Day, and also John Levengood from U of A Dining. Next Saturday, Eric Fine, who's the Regional Director of Sales at Natura Water, and you're not going to believe what this company does either. It's like, how did I even find them, and what the heck do they do? It's blown me away, but they're making a difference. So, Derek, thank you so much, and good luck, and I hope you will come back on now that you're building this huge network. Infinity Resource Group? Earth 911, are they changing their name too?
No, we're actually both going to keep our same names. We're just going to, that'll be our parent.
That'll be your, like, DBA. Okay, that's awesome. Yeah. Any last final shout-out in 30 seconds?
Derek, thanks for being a part of Mrs. Green's World Radio Network.